The crucial issue that arises in religious life is the problem of evil. There is always an Ahriman before an Ahura Mazda, a Satan before a God, and a totally irreconcilable material evil before the religious seeker or the spiritual aspirant. We are troubled very much with this existence of evil, and we do not know what to do with it. We have been told, and we are also prone to get convinced, that what you call evil is against religion, against what is good. So we go with the conviction that religion is against evil and evil is against religion. And we have already tabulated in our own minds the characteristics of evil. We have a confirmed opinion as to what evil is. And whatever we are convinced about as the undesirable becomes an object of hatred, thing to be abandoned wholly. And a religious novitiate begins to struggle with his own mind in his attempt at rejecting evil right from the beginning. The very idea of taking to religion or spirituality is associated simultaneously with the idea of rejecting something. He starts rejecting all things which he regards as evil. And what the condemning which cannot stand before the light of God's spirituality. But the struggle tells upon one's own mental health, because it is not merely a warfare of justice or a battle in the name of righteousness merely, but a conflict which arises in one's mind in confronting what is called the evil in the world. The conflict arises due to a peculiar double character of what we conceive as evil. If evil exists, it cannot be destroyed, because that which really is cannot be overcome by any effort. The destruction of a really existent something is unthinkable. And if it does not exist, it is futile to try to overcome it. A thing that is not there cannot frighten us to the extent it does in our daily life. So we do not fully believe what we are thinking in our minds. So it is not really a struggle against evil, it is a struggle within our own selves, against two aspects of conviction which war with each other. It appears that the evil is an incapacity of one aspect of our mind to reconcile itself with another aspect of its own self. Though it looks that we are trying to struggle with an evil outside in the world and in creation, finally it looks that it is not the case. We are trying to wage a war within our own selves, between two conflicting parties in the field of our own psyche, because our mind cannot fully accept that what it is forced to reject as an evil is really an evil. We are not fully convinced about the evil nature of the very same thing which we are compelled to accept as evil under the ordinances of the scriptures and the religious mandates. We start as sick people the moment we take religion. Perhaps we become more sick when we become religious than we were earlier, which makes us moody and crestfallen and worrying right from the beginning to the end. The worry starts the moment you start taking to the field of religion and spirituality, because the conflict begins. A simple man in the world has no conflicts in his mind. He walks on the beaten track, which is very clear before his eyes. But the struggle begins when we begin to start thinking in a different way, almost opposing our own original convictions, and a position about which we ourselves cannot be fully convinced finally. Yesterday I told you there is a lot of irreconcilability between our own inward feelings and outward structure of our environment. This is a perpetual source of trouble to us as long as we are living in this world. And it will persist wherever we go, even in other realms of being. The irreconcilability is not between ourselves and this particular world called the earth. It is rather an irreconcilability between our individual structure and the vast environment of creation in any plane of its manifestation, even if it be in heaven itself. Actually, the world is confronting us with the daggers drawn against us. This is the problem of evil, or rather the beginning of it. The great evil before us is the perception of the world in front of us. Every other conception of evil starts from that. This segmentation of a world outside our consciousness is the beginning of evil. A warring element standing against God's omnipotence. A Lucifer getting converted into a Satan is the standard metaphysical evil before us. And everything that is undesirable follows from this original fall, or the commission of the first sin, as we are always told. The beginning of problem is with our confrontation with the world itself. I pointed out to you in a few words yesterday that in our religious aspirations and spiritual pursuits, we are really after the universal omnipresent mystery, the great self of things. And every effort of ours is a movement towards the achievement of this goal. It is an impulsion from within ourselves towards the attainment of a wholeness, which is the characteristics of the universal self. But this wholeness is cut off and partitioned into a subjective percipient and an outside world. This is the point where we are standing now. And creation is only this much, a presentation of a world before a creator who seems to be standing outside it. The Lucifer that you are speaking of in the biblical language is the world in front of you. He has become a Satan because of warring with God, asserting an independence by his own self. He was an angel in the beginning. He became a Satan afterwards because of an assertion of independence on his part. Over and above the supremacy of God, the omnipotent being, the world was not originally an object of perception like this. It was an angel inseparable from the bosom of the Almighty. The universe, so-called, the creation that you see before your eyes, was not this form which is before us at present. It was one with God's almighty, all-comprehensiveness. So the Satan was an angel once upon a time. He was incapable of distinguishing from God's being. But something happened, nobody knows how it happened and what actually happened. The angel began to feel a sense of importance. And to affirm an importance in the eyes of God or in the presence of the Almighty would be to defy the almighty nature of God. So the world has stood against God's omnipresence when it has asserted its objective characteristic and independence in that manner. So the Satan of the Bible is the world that you see in front of you. He is not in the hell, in inferno, in fire and brimstone, as the literature will tell us. The very thing in front of your eyes is the Satan. And there is no use merely calling names and getting satisfied with the circumstances of life. You idiot, you get away. He is not a solution to the idiocy of the person. You may say, you wretched world, I kick you out in the name of God. He is not a spiritual solution. You may go on calling names, the world is not going to listen to your abuses. It shall be what it is. The great problem of spirituality is the reconciliation of ourselves with the evil which is standing before us and which has taken various forms of the so-called evils of the world. Originally it was a philosophical evil, a metaphysical one in the form of the whole of creation outside consciousness. Then it becomes a cosmological evil, an epistemological evil, a psychological evil, a social evil, a political evil, a business evil, a moral evil, an ethical evil, a very blessed evil. These are all the multitudinous children born to the original evil, the mother of all problems. And we are not going to be saved until we strike a balance between ourselves and the great foe in front of us. The foe happens to be a reality, unfortunately for us. We do not struggle against an unreal foe. The problem of religion, spirituality, philosophy is the problem of this indescribable relationship between ourselves and the ugly world before us, the evil Ariman, the immoral principle. The immoral is a dead principle before us. People are frightened by the very word immoral, unethical, wretched, downfallen. But no use crying down like this. The moral so-called has to reconcile itself with the immoral so-called. The Daiva and the Asura Sampat, mentioned in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, are the moral and the immoral. But no use merely saying it is immoral, I shall not have anything to do with it. You shall have something to do with it. If not today, you shall have to confront it and make it your own, and cannot brook it standing outside you as an enemy of yours forever. It is not for nothing that the great Christ told you that you cannot make friendship with God unless you make friendship with man first. Make peace with your brother first before you make peace with your Father in heaven. But we are always trying to make peace with the Father in heaven by condemning our brother who is an evil before us. Our neighbor is an evil, and therefore I condemn him in the name of the great Almighty who is my friend. This will not work, and it cannot cut ice. Our religion has to be shed as it appears today. And many times I have been under the impression and getting convinced that it is high time that we abolish all the religions of the world and be without religion. And this idea arose in my mind because of the sorrow that I felt at the deceptive attitudes of religions and the camouflage which they put on in the name of morality and divinity, which is to their own ruin and the harm of society itself. We are grinning at God and mocking at our own selves and suffering a sorrow which has arisen because of our idea of morality, ethics, religion, spirituality, God consciousness. This is the fate of religion today. And the great yoga, the union that you speak of, is a union with everything that is confronting you as an other than yourself. The so-called other than yourself is your fear, vidyadvai bhayam bhavati. Whenever there is another near you are afraid of that another. You cannot tolerate that another sitting near. Oh, that wretched thing is sitting. I want to abolish its being. You would like to be a dictator of the whole world, if it would be possible. The dictators are the peculiar distorted affirmations of this unitary being, which he cannot accept the presence of another outside. Such peculiar affirmations of a unitary existence manifest itself as the problem of the evil, which is a problem in the scriptures of every religion. The moment we become religious, we close our eyes to the realities of life, condemning them as ungodly, irreligious, immoral, and unworthy of any consideration at all. Here begins our sorrow. That is why I told you, your sorrow begins the moment you start becoming religious. A wholly social, materialistic person is also happy in his own way. He doesn't bother about anything. Everything is reconcilable to him. He is able to reconcile himself with everything, even with the worst of things in the world, and so he is happy in a way. But you are a very virtuous person, and your virtue is your sorrow. This is again something very unfortunate. The evil that you speak of is a seed of irreconcilability that is present in our own minds. in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, in the famous section on creation, we are told that there was no other to the Supreme God. Atmai Vedam Eka Atra Asit. In the beginning, the one alone was. And that was the state of utter blissfulness. The one appeared as an other to its own self. This is the story of every religion. The cosmological hymns of religions are of a common nature everywhere. You read any scripture of every religion, it will be telling the same thing about the way in which God created the world. The I became a you. The you is the evil, the I is the principle of the affirmation of the righteousness of God. Fortunately, or for any reason, God was the supreme I-ness, and there cannot be an you before God. But we have been told that there was a you. In the original state of things, and curiously, the scripture tells us that God himself felt a kind of uneasiness within himself, as it were, the moment the you of creation appeared before the eye of himself. A very fantastic description is in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. A mystery is creation, and a mystery cannot be explained by any language. These hymns of cosmology tell us that sorrow began the moment God began to see the world. And the eye of God descended into the various eyes of individuals. As the you of original creation descended into the little particulars that you see in this world. Up to the least of things, an ant crawling or a sand particle in the beach of the ocean. There is a series of irreconcilabilities and confrontations. Right from the beginning, original will, which was creative, down to the lowest irreconcilability of a shopkeeper and the customer. All these irreconcilabilities and skirmishes have arisen on account of the original conflict between the I and the you cosmically. And now it has become a conflict in little things, in everything that we see with our eyes, and in the lowest features of human life and any life conceivable. To be religious is to search for God, and to be spiritual is to affirm God's originality of being. And in this affirmation of religion and spirituality, therefore, we are not going to condemn anything as evil, but to absorb the so-called evil of the externality of the world into the I-ness, which is the reflection of God's originality. Thus, to be religious and spiritually aspiring is not to reject the world, but to absorb it into our own selves. And the evil, unfriendly Satan has to be befriended, and he has to be enthroned in the original pristine purity of his being, which was the angelic existence of his in the kingdom of God in the beginning.
Unless Satan is enthroned in the kingdom of God in the very same status he was originally before creation, problem of evil cannot be solved. The problem of evil is the problem of the existence of such a thing called Satan. He was not there in the beginning. He became that later on. And the struggle of the world and the urge of revolution is nothing but the struggle of Satan to return to God's being, a status he has lost, a status which he has to gain once again. And to the extent we are the eyes, we have the divine element within us. And to the extent we are ears, we have the satanic element in us. So we are struggling within ourselves, partly as the divine spark and partly as the divine confronting darkness. Light and darkness come together in the field of our own hearts. And as the Pandavas and the Kauravas are supposed to descend from a single ancestor, light and darkness come both from God only. They become irreconcilable and difficult to ignore their existence because both have come from the same source. The Pandavas are the Kurus, the Kauravas also are the Kurus. The confronting darkness as the Satan of the world outside is as much a child of God as we ourselves who are trying to struggle with this Satan. Virtue is as much a child of God as vice is, and vice versa. Therefore, religion is not a process of the abandonment of evil as an undesirable principle, but rather the process of the absorption of the evilness of the so-called evil thing into the righteousness of the kingdom of God, wherein evil cannot be as darkness cannot be when the sun rises. So religion is a process of a friendliness of attitude, an establishment of conformity with things, and not an abandonment of evil things because they cannot be ultimately, it does not exist. Because it does not exist, it has become a problem. If it had really existed, it would not have been a confronting principle. Also, if it had been really existing, we would not have been trying to overcome it. But what is evil again? Place this question before your own minds. It is a part of you struggling with another part of your own self. One part of you is the so-called present I or you. The other part is what you are unable to reconcile yourself to. When you are attracted to anything in this world, you are pulled by a part of your own self that you see in the world of space and time externally. Otherwise, who can attract you in this world? How can a totally contrary being pull you in its own direction? Unless there is something akin in its character present in itself. Unless a feature belonging to yourself is present in the world outside, it cannot pull you, attract you and demand your attention. A part of you is present outside there. So you are calling yourself in the things outside and calling it an evil, you are trying to run away from a part of your own self. The evil of the world is a part of your own self, and therefore you cannot run away from evil. Just as you cannot say that you do not exist, you cannot say that evil does not exist. But at the same time, you cannot say that you are other than your own self. You cannot be something more than or less than or different from what you are. In the same way, the so-called principle of evil cannot be regarded as a feature total alien to your own self. So the fight with evil is a fight with one's own self. It is one part of oneself fighting with another part of oneself. The inward, individualized segment struggling to overcome the barrier that is there between itself and another part of its own self in the form of things outside. The whole world is a part of yourself. And with that you are struggling, calling it evil, condemning it, etc. Therefore, you can never overcome it unless you have become one with it. The overcoming of evil is a becoming one with it so that it ceases to be evil afterwards. The world confronts us as long as it is looked upon as an object with which partly we can reconcile ourselves and partly we cannot. In one aspect of it, it is impossible to ignore its existence. In another aspect of it, it is difficult to bring it as a part of our own self. As an other to our own selves, it cannot be reconciled with ourselves. But as a principle which has somehow or other isolated itself from our own self, we have to reconcile ourselves with itself. As we have a double personality within us, there is a double feature in everything in the world. When we take to religious practice or to the practice of yoga, we are in a terrible difficulty indeed. Very few can succeed in yoga or even religion or spirituality or whatever worthwhile thing there is, because the moral evil stares at us as an insoluble problem before us. And the ideas of the undesirable, which have been implanted in our minds right from the various incarnations we have passed through, obstruct our new reoriented form of thinking. And even when we think religiously or so in a so-called divine way, we are thinking in an old stereotyped fashion only. The concept of God and religion that we have today is a prejudiced conception which has been engendered by the samskaras or the impressions of the past, which are in our own selves even now. And what the seed is, that shall also be the nature of the fruit yielded by the plant or the tree arising from the seed. You cannot have a new qualitative concept different from the idea already we are capable of from the point of view of the impressions in our own psychic personality. We are a big conglomeration within our own self psychically. We are a muddle and a chaos. And this chaotic muddle is the quagmire from which arises the plant of the so-called religious aspiration. And naturally it is in the same way affected as any other thought can be affected. Hence, we find ourselves in a situation which is literally called the pull between the devil and the deep sea, or the horns of a dilemma. The reason why we have been told again and again that a guru is necessary is this. that we have to be deconditioned in our brain. Or rather, I would say, we have to be dehypnotized. We are in a hypnotic condition today by the conditions imposed upon us due to the existence of racial factors psychically embedded in us and the impressions formed by experiences of the past through the various incarnations of our own individualities. We have not started life just now, a few years back, when we came out from the mother's womb, nothing of the sort. Our life began, we do not know when. We have been living for centuries, for aeons. We have been passing through forms and forms, entering new forms in our struggle to overcome this evil of an other than God's being. As a soldier in the field may declare a temporary truce to regain his strength, take rest in his camp or tent, only to resume the battle next morning, we are shedding this form of the present personality as soldiers in the battle of life, entering into a camp of unconsciousness for time being to resume the battle of the very same existence, confrontation with the evil in another form which we have to assume whether we want it or not. So the impressions formed in our psyche, which pursues us wherever we go through the various incarnations, stand as obstacles for a totally reoriented form of thinking. The reason why we require a guru or a teacher or a superior in this task is because we cannot enlighten ourselves in a newly qualitative manner as long as we are capable of thinking only in the old fashion, conditioned by the psyche which has been impressed with the various forms of experience through which it has passed in the earlier incarnations of life. Hence, the need for a guru to reiterate. The reason why we do not seem to be achieving anything worthwhile, even in a noble pursuit called religion or yoga, is that we are the same old bandicoots. Whatever be our feeling of advancement in yoga, spirituality, etc., we have not changed a bit, and we cannot also change so easily, whatever be our imagination about our own selves. We always put on appearances of religion, very, very unfortunately. We are religionists and yogis only for other people. In our own selves, we are nothing. And we cannot be anything but we are. We have been forced somehow to appear as religious men. Otherwise, we will be cowed down upon and spat at by the society outside. So, we would like to be comfortable religionists and yogis. And who can face this devil of the world? Even if it be affirming a totally contrary attitude to that which is expected of you as a truly religious attitude. A sword is necessary for us. When Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa came under the influence of the great master Kotapuri, he was asked to contemplate, concentrate, meditate. "Yes, close your eyes and meditate," said the great master. "What do you see?" "Yes, I see mother. I see my mother." "What is the mother? Which mother are you seeing?" I am seeing mother, my divine mother. Cut off her head. Oh, my dear mother, how can I cut off her head? No, sever her head with the sword of discrimination. No, I cannot. My mother, my dear, how can I sever her head? No, you must, Pratapati said. I cannot, he said. You must. There was an argument like this. And with a tremendous, irreconcilable, painful, agonizing feeling of sorrow which he alone could experience, with the sword of knowledge, he cut off the head of his mother. And there was no mother who could do this. And there was a flood about which we are told in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, into which he entered. The dear mother is our world, who has bred us and taken care of us and brought us as her own child on her lap. This was the struggle of Arjuna. Oh, my dear grandfather, grandsire, my dear guru, my dear cousins, my dear everything. And Sri Krishna's argument was the same as the argument of Totapuri to Ramakrishna. Sever the head of mother, father, everybody. Oh God, how is it possible? You are telling me dreadful things. The world has been a dear object. It has been dear, but it has been object. That is the pitiable form of it. It is very good that it is very dear. Everything has to be dear. But it is an object. How can object be dear? Only the self can be dear, says the Upanishad. Navare sarvasya kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati, atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. Only the self can be dear and nothing else can be dear. How can an object be dear? While it is true that to love a thing is a virtue and a noble trait, to love an object is unthinkable. How could one love an object? Because an object is something different from you. How can you love a thing which is not you? How could you love something which is totally alien to you, which is other than you, which is opposing you, which is an object to the subject, which means to say totally different from what you are? How can I love that which is totally different from me? How can I be a friend of another person who can think at all, and cannot think at all in a way in which I am able to think? How can I be friendly with an individual who is moving in an opposite direction altogether? The objectivity of the objects is a contrary movement of consciousness to the one it is accustomed. The non-self is the object. The self is the reflection of God's omnipresence. God is a self. I am I. The I am I in the universal form is God consciousness affirming. And you or that or an externality or an object or something different is unthinkable before God. So the Brahadaranyaka Upanishad tells us in the fourth section of its first chapter, a grand, terrifying dicta. Whoever meditates in this manner shall destroy evil and nobody can stand before it. You will have no enemy in front of you. You will burn like ashes. Before whom? Before that which meditates on this supreme I am what I am, before which no object can be. When it is said in the Upanishad that the meditator on this supreme I am I destroys everything that is outside, no foe can stand before that person. What it means is that anything that contents it cannot stand before it. And unfortunately, the world is contending before us as an independent existence, and you have never felt that it is a part of you or you are a part of it. Though in your loves for things, you have unconsciously accepted a participation of yourself in it, and its participation in you though you have spoken to the world with the tongue in the cheek, or a little bit of salt in your mouth, not accepting it fully. You have not fully accepted that the world is a part of you, nor have you completely rejected it. You cannot reject it because you love it. But you cannot make it a part of yourself because it asserts its independence. Even your wife, your son are independent individuals. They would not like to merge in you. The wife will assert her independence, the husband asserts his independence, the child or the son or the daughter assert their independence. Though you may say they are mine in some way only, in some under some conditions, only they are not you. So even the dearest of objects has an independence of its own, and it will not like to get absorbed into you totally and lose its individuality. So the world will not like that. So much love it cannot evince in regard to yourself. The world does not want from you so much love as to lose its independence totally and get absorbed into yourself. That is not possible. No, I am what I am. Here is the explanation for what religions called evil. It has become so difficult to understand because it is a mystery which is pulling you two ways, wanting to get absorbed into yourself by way of love and yet wanting to stand independent of you. This is an irreconcilable, unthinkable and indefensible attitude of things. This is why they say the world is Maya. It is an inscrutable mystery and a jugglery. How can you explain this peculiar situation except by the term jugglery? A juggle is a peculiar phenomenon which is neither there nor not there. It is not there because you cannot see it always there, it has vanished, and sometimes you cannot see it also. It is there because you see sometimes. So, this peculiar relationship of ours with the world, with our friends, with our family members, with the society, etc., has to be reconciled and cut through before we really become God-men. So we cannot simply shirk our responsibilities in this arduous task, which was the task before Arjuna's irreconcilable attitude and a problem before every spiritual seeker. The whole of spiritual life is a series of confrontations and reconciliations with the problems arising out of the notion of evil, externality, and the undesirable, the immoral, the unethical, the dark principle, the Satan, the Ariman, whatever you call it. So, I am here to tell you something very strange in this day, and that will act like a medicine, bitter to the core, and impossible to swallow, but which will cure your illness because it is so deep-rooted and it has to be swallowed, if not today, at least tomorrow. Hari Om Tat Sat.